All right, and we are back. This is the IT Babble Podcast. I am Patrick Cawley, watching the score on the Ohio State-Wisconsin game, having a beer, and talking with my good friend Tony DePreto. Tony, how are things in South Korea?
Things are pretty good. It's better weather than Shanghai, which is good because it's winter. It's cold and windy, but it's like sunny skies, so that's nice. And yeah, it's Sunday this year. We have to do 16 Saturdays. One of them was yesterday. So now I think we've got like 13, 14 left. So they're only half days, but still, when you have to work on a Saturday, it kind of exhausts you.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be nice to sleep in and get some other projects around the house done.
Yep. So anyway, that's how it's going. It's this, what I'm now going to start calling the year of colonization.
Yeah, opening a new school, it's got to be crazy.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to start drawing parallels to like pilgrims landing at, or Puritans landing at Plymouth Rock, people trying to go to the moon, people trying to go to Mars. It's all about the same, just with oxygen.
Just in kimchi, because you're in South Korea, and I understand they love kimchi.
Yeah, I think kimchi might be, I think it's actually keeping me alive. So I haven't really been, I've been so busy. I've like in a month, I've gone to the gym twice, but we didn't have our like actual fitness center open till like last week. So I'm going to try to go today, but I don't know. I just thought, you know, I'm going to get super fat. I'm going to be just dead, but I don't know. I actually feel pretty good. And I'm just going to attribute it to the Korean diet because I'm not doing anything else to help myself.
Just eating lots of kimchi.
Well, I'm just eating the Korean food every day. So we have like Korean food and non-Korean food at lunch every day. And I just keep eating the Korean food. I just do it. It doesn't really taste bad. It's like nothing I really want, but it doesn't taste bad. And I feel like it's keeping me alive. So,
all right. Keep it up then. Keep it up.
I will.
On today's episode, episode 144, we're going to be talking about why perfect grades don't matter. We're going to be talking about Steam. And then anything else we want, and we're gonna. But we'll start off with Kidum. But before we start off, the buzz is gone, Tony. The buzz that plagued us in episode 143 is no longer. It is gone.
And you found out that it wasn't a cable, right?
Yeah, I really thought it was a cable, or maybe I thought it was a cable. And then when I started swapping out cables, testing it earlier this week. Cable had nothing to do with it. It kept buzzing, and so I really thought that my Zoom was faulty or something had happened to my Zoom, and I was freaking out. But I was reading a bunch of blogs, and one blog said, you know, just move your whole rig to another location in your home, and that's what I did. I came out to the kitchen table, which is where I'm at now, and sure enough, the buzz stopped. Didn't change anything else. Just picked up everything, put it on the kitchen table, different room. Boom, no more buzz. It's awesome. It's great. We are buzz free.
Do you think it was the Russians?
It had to be. It was the Russians. It was either the Russians or Matt Lauer. It's one of the two. I'm just happy the buzz is gone.
Apparently,
so I'm not
Matt Lauer was going to work every day by helicopter, so I think that's over now.
I think that may be over. He doesn't have to worry about going to work ever again, I think is what it's... early retirement for Mr. Lauer. But he was making $29 million a year, I heard.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
I think the problem, actually, maybe with all this stuff, it's the ridiculous salaries. If you're not making that much money, you don't do so many insane things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, once you get to the point where you don't need to buy anything ever and you don't need anything, you just start doing crazy stuff.
Yeah, keep yourself active. You know.
Like one of the Metallica dudes, he lives in the middle of nowhere in Colorado and he raises bees. And that's all he wants to do. Like, that's just what happens to you. You're just like, I'm going to raise bees now.
Yeah. Or do something really stupid and crazy and put myself and my family at risk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we may talk about that later on another episode, but right now I want to talk about something called Kidum, KIDDOM.
And it's not Kidum.com, which is a shopping site for children.
That's right. It is not Kidum. It is Kidum.co, C-O. And it's a new-ish And I say newish because it's been around for since 2012. It's a newish LMS that I found out about. I saw this article on Axios, which I don't really read very often, but it showed up in I think on Flipboard. It showed up on Flipboard, and this in the article says a Silicon Valley startup is quietly taking over U.S. classrooms, and they're talking about Kittim. And in the article, they say that in 70% of U.S. districts and schools that there are people using Kittim on there. And what Kittim is a learning management system, much like Edmodo or Schoology or Haiku, or there's a whole bunch of them out there now. But the one big difference is when you make an assignment, you tag a standard to it. It's really standard driven. And so you can then look over your unit or all the, and you can see the standards and you're like, oh, I hit this standard. I didn't hit this standard very much. And you can see where the kids are performing on which standard. You're like, wow, they're doing really good on standards A, standard C, and standard D, but standard B, they're having some trouble with. We need to go back and rethink about that. And I thought it was kind of an interesting take on the LMS. And schools are so very standards focused and very test focused. And so this is something I think that would appeal to a lot of schools in the United States. I don't know, Tony, do you think you would appeal to schools beyond the United States?
I think the issue, like small schools, yeah, but like I think the main issue with all of these systems, because my school this year, they decided they're going to use this new service, which I'm not going to name, instead of Atlas Rubicon, which I will name because everyone knows it.
Yeah.
Because everybody hates Atlas Rubicon, even though Atlas does work, everybody hates it. So they want to make a change. And, you know, the problem is just getting, literally, it's getting all of this stuff set up so that it's correct. I mean, for example, at least with Atlas Rubicon, they have like LDAP and Active Directory Sync. So your users, if you know what you're doing, your users who have like Gmail accounts and stuff, they can log in and
yeah.
You don't have to make accounts. And Atlas makes it really easy for you to take your courses that you've made in PowerSchool or another system and import them. And then the only manual work is really just assigning the teachers to the courses, to the maps. All of that is a big deal because, you know, your school changes all the time and you got to keep this data updated. I think if you're in a system like a public school where you don't really have control, school starts, kids can move around for maybe 2 days and there's no recourse and there's no rebalancing throughout the year. People can't join late, all that stuff. Then I think it's fine. But if you don't, the thing is, like, it looks fine, but, you know, if you come and talk to someone like me, I'm going to really just get into the management side. Because once it becomes tedious to manage, no one at the top uses it. They don't run reports. They don't pay attention to it. So it's great if teachers, like, know what standards they need to teach. That's awesome. But the teachers who aren't teaching standards to the standards, somebody needs to, like, call them out on it and work with them. So... And then a lot of these things are completely disconnected from parents. I don't think parents understand standards very much. They don't really get it.
Yeah, that's one thing that Kittim does that's kind of interesting. I don't have an account with it yet. I haven't really sat down and played with it. I've just watched a few of their videos on YouTube. But what you can do as a teacher is that you can run a report where it lists... It lists the assignments and what standards are attached to those assignments. It's a report specifically for parents. So parents can see, oh, multiplying fractions. Oh, okay, it's these two standards is what they're working on. You know, this word problem standard and multiplying fraction standard. And that kind of, so it kind of helps to tie the standards with the actual practice that's going on inside the classroom.
Well, and I like how, I mean, it's kind of like Power Learning, which is formerly Haiku. I like how you can use, you know, popular services like Khan Academy and bring those in, add standards to them and give them to your students as homework. That's good.
Yeah. Kittim.co does that as well. It allows you to pull from a various different sites. I mean, you can just write up an assignment or attach a worksheet or, or attach something from your Google Drive, but you can also pull from like Khan Academy and some other sites. I haven't seen the list of what other sites that they tie into, but it was there on one of their demos where they did put a Khan Academy video and like assignment in there, and I thought that was kind of nice. But I mean, is this drive, is it being standards driven? Is that a really good thing? I mean, that's always up for debate. That's
yeah. It depends on what standards you're using. I mean, you need something to measure what people are doing. I don't think standards are the worst way to do that. Sometimes though, like it's like, oh, we're using Common Core. It's like, well, which Common Core are you using? If you've ever looked at the Common Core standards, there's sets for almost every state, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like I like to use ISTE standards for doing Steam and IT because I find them to be general and I find them to be very topical. So, it helps me make sure I'm covering all the core areas, but it doesn't necessarily tell me if the student's going to be successful in the future.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, and even Common Core like math, I mean, if you look how it's broken down, it's like, oh, they can do geometry. Oh, they can do algebra two. Well, can they solve a problem that requires them to know that they need to mix geometry and algebra two? I don't think that measures that.
No, I don't think it does either. I think it's one thing that standards have been criticized about is that it doesn't, you're learning skills, but not how to apply those skills or how to use those skills in a practical manner, or how to be creative in using the skills as well, which is why there's a big push for STEM and STEAM right now. And in fact, that's actually, wow, that segues perfectly into one of our topics here. I saw this article of what is STEAM education and why it is the new engine of the future job market, by Carol Gornowitz.
Yeah,
I can't say that name. I don't.
I think it's Gornowitz.
Wow, Gornowitz. How do
I
you?
Think so.
He's got a little accent there on the O.
I'm skipping the accent. It's just it's also what I did in China. I just skip the tone. You just say the word and you just look at him and they're like,
okay,
all right, it's got to be that. It's the only thing I sell that sounds like that.
So, this guy is the CEO of a company called Skriware, which sells Steam, robots and all sorts of stuff that schools can use. Robots, 3D printers, a whole bunch of stuff. And he wrote this on Medium. He wrote a pretty lengthy of why it's important to be doing STEAM. And for those out there who don't know what STEAM is, Tony, you want to break it down for them? What does the acronym stand for? Do you remember?
Yeah, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. I personally don't like the A in there. I think that's just taking it too far for so many reasons. I think STEM education is normal. And then there's like bio-STEM, which is similar, but students are actually working with things that grow. But I think the art is kind of off-putting for me. The program at my school that I'm running, somebody put an A in, and I didn't know that, and it annoys me every day.
Well, you know why they have the A in there is because, you know, you talk to any English teacher or an art teacher, or, you know, music teacher, and they'll be like, why is it science, technology, engineering, and math? What art can't be a part of that anywhere? No,
it totally can, but you need an art teacher in the classroom. No one does that. So like, and I'll talk about that in a minute. I'm actually working on that problem. You can totally do that, but unless you're doing a co-curriculum plan with like your art department, the chances that you're going to have someone who does programming, robotics, fabrication, and art concepts in one human being, that's pretty slim. It's a pretty slim chance there.
But I think
especially at grades, because it's like, your STEM workshop can be mixed age groups, 6 to 12. You can do science, technology, engineering, art, and math, one person. And that includes programming. I don't think so.
Yeah. 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 That's one in a million right there.
If there's anyone out there who is that one person, please contact me and I will get you a job in Korea. So, because that will, and then I will use that additional headcount. I will try to use that just for like IT. So there we go. If I can find that one person.
So you can contact Tony. How can they get a hold of you, Tony? If they want to work in Jeju Island in South Korea.
Yeah, so you can go to either tonydepreto.com or tonydepreto@gmail.com.
There you
That's
go.
fine.
There you go, people. There you go. If you're looking for a job and you happen to
But
be
you've got to be the Captain America, or what's the female equivalent to Captain America in comics, Patrick?
Miss Marvel. Miss
Miss
Marvel.
Marvel.
Yeah.
You've got to be one of those two for STEAM, okay? You need to be bioengineered to deliver this curriculum.
And a teaching degree would help. A teaching degree
Yeah,
would help.
that would help. Or just a master's, just a master's somehow in this subject.
And yeah, it's definitely really important. I don't know if it's going to be the engine of the job market in the future or not. I mean, these people who are going to be engineers and who can marry engineering and art, they're definitely going to be well employed. They're not going to have too many troubles finding a job, I don't believe. But one thing I wanted to point out, one thing that irked me a little bit about this article was the guy who wrote it. He is in the business of selling you STEAM stuff, your school STEAM stuff. So he's definitely going to try to convince you. It's a bit of an ad, and it doesn't look like an ad. It looks like, it looks like an article of why STEAM is important and why schools should take notice of it. But
But it's a native ad.
it's an ad. All the pictures in there of products that he is selling, all the videos of his products. It's an ad. It's a native ad, and you gotta be aware, people. You got to beware, people, because a lot of people in education, I don't think they pay attention to this stuff. They read an article and they take it as face value, and they're like, "Oh wow, that's really good," but it is a native ad, and they are trying to sell you. I don't disagree with what this guy's saying. I think it's a little underhanded that he's slipping in his products all over the place.
Yeah, and I learned pretty quickly this year. So this was the first year I've like been in a classroom that's supposed to be a STEAM classroom,
Oh, that's cool.
and like by definition. And I started out. So I had a plan that I took from the MIT Fab Lab project. Which, if you're not following that, then you're missing 16 years of trial and error in developing a STEM curriculum for free. So that's pretty stupid. So you need to follow that. Even if you don't agree with everything, you need to study it. They have these Fab Lab training centers now in like 16 countries, and they've been running this curriculum for a very long time.
I am putting
So,
their website in the show notes. So.
and so, so I actually visited three MIT Fab Labs in Asia to learn how things went together. I interviewed students. And the first thing I did when I got in the classroom was I did everything wrong for 3 weeks. Because what did I do? I did what I was doing before, which is what people do. I was running it like I was teaching programming or something like that. And so I had to sit down and really think about what I was doing, and I had to look back at their curriculum. And it's difficult because the goal is for students to learn to solve problems, and you don't fabricate stuff in 3D printers or anything else unless you need to solve the problem. You don't go in there and say, this week we're going to print little things. That and so I started my kids off on a project, and it was going really well, and then I was like, this project is totally wrong. So I just kind of explained it to him. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do like what I want to do with you guys. We're going to do, but we can't do it yet. We're going to have to back up, and we're going to have to do some other things first. And it's just, it depends on the students too. You get all these different students in, which is another like Fab Lab concept. You get groups of people in, and you have to look at their skill sets. And from those skill sets, you start working on your project development because Some of them may have skills and be able to do certain things. Others may have no skills. And the goal is that everybody learns how to think to solve problems using different disciplines. It's not that you use everything all the time.
Yeah.
So they need to understand core concepts in, across the board, which is quite difficult. And sometimes you can't even, you can't get into the toys, so to speak, until you cover some of these basics. And one of the things that the guy in Shanghai told me at the Fab Lab is, level one kids need to learn to like fold things out of paper and cut things and make things out of like paper and cardboard. And he said the reason is because first they need to learn how to plan to use materials before you start using really expensive materials. And they need to be able to prototype things before you start, modeling it and trying to use computer controlled systems to build it. And it makes a lot of sense. So they need some basic skills. So we had like an origami lesson to learn how to fold paper. And then I gave them a task to use a box. I gave each team an iMac box and some tools and a few additional supplies. And I'm like, with the stuff on your table, here's a problem I need you to solve. And that's how I've been doing it now. And it's a lot better. And it's frustrating. It's really frustrating because I'm not telling them how to do it.
Yeah.
I'm giving them some ideas. I'm showing them a problem. And what we're doing now is I'm actually having them identify a problem and prove it is a problem. That's another thing. Like, we don't make stuff for no reason. Like, you need to identify a problem and be able to test it. Test that there is a problem. And they don't know how to do that because they've always just been given problems to solve. So there's just a lot more to it than like having equipment. And I think I'm hoping that what I'm doing this year, when I'm finished, I'm going to be able to sit down and actually write a better curriculum out for people to follow, because I think it's for younger students, the most important thing is that when they walk into like an unknown situation, they have the confidence and they know they can approach it from different angles.
Yeah, we have a an innovation, we call it the innovation lab, and in our place, and we have a in my school we have a 3D printer, but most of the materials in there are cardboard, string, just stuff like that. And most of the when students are in there, they're not really using the 3D printer so much, but they are using those other materials more. And that makes total sense that they need to be able to under and also understand how to put things together. Like if you're 3D printing something that needs to assemble, you have to make sure that, well, this can actually be assembled and that it will stay assembled and it will do what it needs to do. And you have to understand how those pieces go together. And modeling it within cardboard and other materials is wow, that's a much better way. First, that is. I never even thought of it
So it's
that way.
just
It's
not
really
as,
good.
it's just not as exciting. And it's not my idea. This is not my idea. Like I said, I went off script for a few weeks. I've gotten back on script and I'm going to stick to it. It's the way I think it needs to go. And I think that model's successful outside of high school. And MIT now has a Fab Teen program and it's really similar. So I'm just trying to stay on target.
Very cool. And I want to go back to the groups of people that you have in there. Like there seems to be kind of a misconception where, oh, the people who are doing this, these are your 'cause you're trusting them
Okay, so
with like hammers and stuff. So they're probably the most responsible kids you have on campus. They're probably your 4.0, your straight A students.
well, except for the middle school kids, which are required to take STEAM. They're
Oh.
just great. They're just crazy. I will not let them use hammers at all yet. Like, yeah. But so I identified another problem, the A for art, right?
Oh,
So
yeah.
I couldn't, I'm just really limited. And you're like, but Tony, you know how to use Photoshop, you know how to do like web design. I'm like, yeah, but all the art you need to do for STEAM is vector. It's vector art, and I
Oh.
don't know how to do it. So I found somebody on campus who is an expert at Adobe Illustrator. And so now the middle school kids, 45 minutes a week, instead of doing robotics or something else, they do Illustrator so they can start building up their vector skills.
Very cool. And
But
for
that
people out
means I'm not in there. Like I leave, the guy comes in because I can't help. I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, Illustrator is pretty similar to Photoshop, but fundamentally, it's a big difference for the people out there who don't know the difference between a, because we're talking about Photoshop works with pixels, which are little squares that make up an image. And vector is they're lines, correct? I think
Yeah,
I'm.
they're lines, and they vector images can be resized to any size without losing resolution.
That's right. That's right. So, like, if you have taken a picture and you've put it into an image editing software or whatever, and you have blown it up, made it larger than what it is, it'll look all pixelated and look all terrible. But with vectors, that'll never happen. It'll.
Right, and it's the vector images that the machines read to 3D print, to cut things out, to do vinyl printing. The sewing machine, the like computer controlled sewing machine reads vector files.
Ah.
So like it's all vector based. So they have to know how to do vector drawing. And the free tools for vector drawing, if you don't have Photoshop, are not amazing. So and this guy can't cover the high school courses that I'm doing. So to cover their vector needs, I'm working with Lucidchart and
Oh.
another program. But we're just doing like flow charts, layouts, really flat things that I can do. But the middle school kids, if they do vector drawing for this whole semester, and then maybe again in grade 8, they do another round of vector drawing, by the time they're in high school, they'll be able to use software to draw and simulate everything they need. So that's even better than using cardboard if you can trust your drawings.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So it's a big deal. I mean, I understand the A in STEAM, but it's a complete, for in my opinion, it's a different specialty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
Very.
mean, I can do like hot glue guns and construction paper.
Scissors and hammers and some wood. Yeah. Yeah.
That's about it.
Oh. So, but you like STEAM. And well, STEM and STEAM, because they both at their core is people solving problems, people identifying problems, coming up, planning for solutions, testing your solution to see if it works or not, and then improving upon it, and going back and back and back and back and back, and
And not
collaborating with
worrying
others.
about your grade, not worrying about your grade.
Yeah, because
That's so annoying.
yeah, and which brings us to our last topic here. I saw this; it was on Reddit, and it's called Why Perfect Grades Don't Matter, and it's from The Atlantic. Which is that a magazine or is that a news? That's a magazine, I believe, right? In America? The
Yeah, the
Atlantic?
Atlantic,
Yeah.
yeah.
And they made one about why grades don't matter. And they talk about how grades do not predict future success in college or beyond. And how like high stakes tests also don't predict any sort of success or grades don't mean anything, right? People are just some people are I knew people in high school who took the easiest courses they could so they could end up with a high GPA. But I mean, if grades don't matter, then how do students compare themselves to one another? And how do they get into colleges?
And yeah, I think it's really difficult. I know everyone's like, oh, well, people, they don't care anymore. They're doing this, they're doing that. I don't know. I think no matter what anyone says, I feel like the SAT, unfortunately, is still really important for a lot of schools. And a solid GPA matters. So it's tough. I do think that the way you grade students, though, and the types of courses they take, I think that's really important. I told, told the STEM kids numerous times, you're looking at an 80% failure rate in your projects. Like you've never done this before. Most of your projects aren't going to work. So I'm not going to grade you on how amazing your solution is. And breaking it down to grade them formatively is time consuming. And you have to make a lot of judgment calls. Everyone's like, just use a rubric. I'm just like, yeah, it doesn't really work like that. I mean, if these
No.
kids want to take or they want to take a risk, like, do I add risk taking to the rubric and how much should that be worth? Like they could take a risk and never finish their project, but really learn a lot. So trying to measure them as people who are growing and learning is really difficult. And but if you know someone's going to look at that STEAM grade and decide, hey, they're applying for my school, like, did they get a good grade? Did they get overall good grades? And that STEAM grade is important to their GPA. You've got to be aware of that. You can't just fail them in STEAM.
Of course, of course. And like, there was a class in college. I didn't take it because I wasn't an engineer, but I had some friends who were engineers and did take this class, and nobody in the class failed. I passed. Nobody passed. It was, the highest grade was a 47% in the class. Now, he curved the grade, of course. And so they got B's. Some of them got A's and some got B's and C's, and some did fail. But if he was going just on his grade book, nobody passed the class, because he was giving them real world engineering issues, civil engineering issues. Like, I need you to build a bridge. I need you to design a bridge that can hold, the X number of cars passing over it at one time. And this is the length of the bridge, and go. And they would do it, and he
Right.
would be like, nope, this bridge is going to collapse after a year or even sooner because of this. That's a, and he just graded them based on what they, and they learned a ton out of the class. And but they didn't technically pass the class,
Right.
but he didn't want to punish them for that, so, because they learned so much. So he was a weird guy. He was a weirdo. He was, but he was very good teacher, very good, very smart.
And if you have classes that don't count for anything, like if you're like, oh, math and English and science, they're like worth, a full credit, and STEAM and whatever, it's only worth like a half credit. Students won't generally participate at the same level. So you can't do it that way either. At least most students I know won't. They'll be like, well, I've got to focus on English, so I'm just gonna not do any work for your class.
I can get a C here, and I can fix that later on in my school year and with a different
But
class and bring that up.
I agree with the article. I agree with the article. I've seen a lot of high performing students completely fail their first year. And I think you and I have said that the new model should be when you get out of school, take a year off, work, travel, try to do something, and make sure get an idea about what you want to do. And there's lots of places you can go to school to now. A lot of people don't realize it. If you're from the US, you can go to school in Canada, you can go to school in Spain, Japan, China, Germany, cheaper than you can in the United States.
In a lot of cases, very, very cheap compared to what
And
it
you
is
can
here.
have a completely different kind of experience. So, and when, what do we always hear? What stories do we always hear? Do we hear about the person who graduated from Harvard and went on to develop a software company? No, we hear about the guy who dropped out in his third year and decided to take a risk. That's always what we hear. It's never the other way around.
No. I mean, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, all dropped out of college. Every one of them dropped out of college, did not finish. And they are, well, not Steve Jobs, because he's passed, but but the other two are alive and incredibly wealthy and powerful people in the world. So I thought it was an interesting video. I thought I put it on the put it in there, and I think, but grades matter to a lot of groups of people. I think they matter a tremendous amount to parents, because, like you said, parents don't really understand standards. So if your school uses standards, they're like, what is? And for those of you who haven't seen standards, the way that they're typically written is usually a number followed by like a letter, and then perhaps another number and another letter. And they're like, where do I go to find what that means? What does that really mean? And often the standards are, unless you're talking about math, they can be often quite vague. And you'll see some one standard that's in sixth grade, and you may see the exact same standard for an 11th grade English class. And you're like, well, how do these two differ? And so there's certainly, there can be some confusion there. And so parents, I think, really prefer grade. They love just to log on to the school website, click on their kid and say, oh, Johnny has an
That's
A,
true.
an A in
That's
math,
true. And
great. I
I don't think they read comments.
no, I don't, I know, I don't think they look at the feedback either. I'm sure some students who they're like, they write a paper and they get A minus, and there might be comments all over it, and some of them might read it, but some students might be like, oh, I got an A minus, great, I'll read those comments later, but I'm done with it, I'm finished.
So I've been trying to think about a hybrid model because I've done my like assessment training through the PTC and it's mainly focused on international schools, but because of that, they get to try a lot of stuff out that you can't do in public schools.
Yeah.
And they believe in no grades, which we've talked about before. But I think a better model is do your grades, give kids GPAs, but just except for your final report card, the only thing you should share with parents on a weekly basis are comments. Just don't show them the grades. Just, hey, if you want to be involved in your child's learning, read this.
Yeah, and I think that's great, but the group of people who are going to have, well, there's two problems with that.
I could never do this, okay? Even at my school now, if I tried to do this, the school would be surrounded by parents and burnt to the ground. Couldn't do it.
And
I'm just
the
saying,
teachers
I
would be
think it's
up
a
in
good
arms
idea.
with it too. They're like, I have to write comments every week for all of my students. There's no way I'm going to do that. Or they might
But
write
the
like, you
only
had a good week.
but how, the only way to keep people from looking at grades is not to show them grades. I just don't know another way to do it. I decided to look up somebody else. Elon Musk, who no matter what you think about him, he's pretty successful guy one way or the other. And when he was when he was 17, he got out of South Africa so he wouldn't have to be a soldier to enforce apartheid. And then he did go to university, but he transferred to the University of Pennsylvania after 2 years of being at a Canadian university, and he got a fraternity house, which he turned into a nightclub to make money. I mean, that's not a normal person, and
No.
when he did get into a PhD program and he stayed there only 2 days and then left to try to do a startup program in Silicon Valley. So it's kind of the same thing, He got to a point where he's like, education's just not gonna help me anymore. So, or he just decided to take a risk. And if you look at his life, growing up in South Africa and having various personal things happen to him, he was not risk averse. He was able to take risks. So as a young person, something happened to him which helped him know that he could take risks and bounce back. And I think that's what we could start teaching more if we weren't always focused on grades.
On grades and GPA and and test scores and I wish I and I'm sure there are schools out there who they're like, you know what, this is all we're going to do, we're just going to work on these projects and that's it. And I don't know, it's hard to sell that to a school or to a public school or to a group of parents. Like
Yeah, it's really
I could
difficult.
see the school board sitting in front of hundreds of parents saying, okay, we're doing away with grades. And we're going to be project based, and I can just see parents really having a really difficult time, really, really, really difficult time with the whole thing. So, anyway, an interesting topic. Interesting, why grades don't matter. It leads off to a whole lot of other issues.
Yeah, if you want, I don't know, as a teacher, if you have to give grades, you do it, but make sure you work things into your classroom that keep kids on their toes and make them realize that there's more to life than grades. Like the other day, I told my kids that if you go outside the door and turn right, nothing exists until you look at it.
That's good.
And then they just kind of stared at me. I'm like, that's just how it is. And then that's how I ended the class. I think that kind of stuff's important.
That is good.
Because maybe one of them will be like, is he crazy? And then they'll start looking it up and like, oh, people actually think that they can prove that, or that there's multiple universes and maybe what we're seeing isn't even real. Like, you need to get them like thinking about stuff that's a bit abstract, things so they can see that there's all these people out there who are trying stuff and everybody thinks they're crazy and like there's no way to prove it. They're just gonna do it. They just believe it. They just believe it.
I like that. I like that. Having goals and dreams, and then
Didn't we used to have that in Dubai? Wasn't that a day? Wasn't there like dreams and goals day or something?
there was, yeah, there was. I think it was in the elementary school, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know how that actually went. Like, I wonder if that's good.
I don't know. I don't know. We can get the Omar.
Oh yeah.
And we can get him on the show. We can ask him because
We
he's
should just ask him what his dreams and goals were that he just was like, I don't even care.
his dreams and goals were, I want to drink more coffee. I want to have another coffee
And
mug on my desk.
I want to have the dirtiest desk in the whole school.
Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished.
And now it's just maintenance. Now it's just keeping it up.
That's right. That's right. It's hard. It's really hard to leave your desk that messy, folks. I mean, it's because it interferes with everything. Everything you try
to
do.
You have a plan to work around it. You got to work around it.
Yeah. You can't just, yeah. Anyway, we could talk all night or all morning in your case about Omar's
show
desk.
150. We have to have Omar on, all three of us, for show 150. We have to make it work.
We have to. I think we can do that. I think we can definitely do it. It'll be winter break. I don't know if he's going anywhere for winter break. No, it won't be. It will be in January. It'll be January by the time we're on 150, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll make it work. All right, man. Well,
sounds good.
Well, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there. And remember, what is it, Tony? Walk out the door and look to the right.
Yeah, if you walk out the door to the right, there's absolutely nothing there until you look at it.
Very cool. Think about that, people. Think about that. I know I will. All right. So that's it. We're out of here.